It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. Each talk fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. I am pleased to report that this week I am coming to you from beautiful Sarasota, Florida at Smith Stadium. A little while later in the podcast, we'll be talking to MLB.com's Yankees beat reporter, Brian Hoke. But for now, it's time to talk fantasy and time to talk with Fred. How you doing, Fred?
I'm good. I'm not as good as someone who's at spring training. That would be awesome, but I'm still doing good.
I wish I could argue with you or say, oh, no, but I can't. It's good. So a lot of we'll start with some reliever news. We got a lot of bullpen news around various places this week. We're going to start with the Rays, where Brad Boxberger is going to be down for a while. I hope this is not the beginning of me having some kind of 411 curse after talking about how much I love Brad Boxberger last week. But they are saying closer by committee. And that's what they said at the start of last year, too, and it ended up with Boxberger. So as you look at this, is there anybody you like from that bunch, Fred?
No one especially. I'm interested maybe a little bit in Alex Colomé if they were to go with him. But I don't know if that will happen. You know, he does have that ability to throw multiple innings, which makes him pretty valuable. I feel like if I was a Boxberger owner, I would probably just start looking at other teams until I got him back. I think Boxberger is still draftable in every league and will still have value later this season. Though I do feel like when he comes back, he's the guy once again. Do you agree with that? Is there a reliever on that team that you're really looking at?
I do. I still like Boxberger a lot just because I like the pitcher. I would say, what if I told you that in 40 innings as a reliever last year, Colomé had 44 Ks and 7 walks? Would that change how you felt about it at all?
No. I'm interested in him. It's just whether they're going to put him. Do you think they're going to just put him in the ninth inning, or do you think they're going to mix and match? Because for him to be relevant in a mixed league for those first, say, 6 to 8 weeks of the season, he kind of has to be a full-time closer.
My experience and observation is even innovative clubs, and the Rays are probably the most innovative club going, say that a lot more than they stick to it. If they were going to do a committee, and if it's a week, and it probably is a committee, and it probably is two or three different guys based on matchups. If you're talking more than a couple of weeks, it is my observation through the years that nearly always, even the clubs we think of as thinking outside the box, are going to end up going with one guy. Now, I don't know that Colomé is going to be that guy, but I think he's the most likely, and as erratic as he has been as a starter, he was awfully good as a reliever last year, and I would be very interested. I'll put it this way. He would be the guy I'd bet on, and I would not be at all surprised if you were really happy to have him after a couple of weeks.
Yeah, so maybe the best plan is in a mixed league, you know, grab Colomé off waivers, put him on your bench, don't use him in week one because he might not get the volume of save chances that you need to make him useful, and then see after a week or two if he's starting to become the guy, and then maybe you can get him in your lineup, and maybe you can get 4, 5, 6 good weeks out of him.
Yeah, and I think that's likely. I mean, again, I'm not you know, selling a house to get him, but I do like him as a reliever, and I like what I think the opportunity. I think he's likely to have the opportunity, and I like what he has done as a reliever. So I'm definitely intrigued. Moving down, the Brewers are saying they're going to go with a committee, and it's a committee of two guys that I'm really not crazy about. Will Smith, Jeremy Jeffress. Jeffress does not have the K rate to go with the same fastball that he has, and Smith walks a lot of guys for a ninth inning guy. Do you like either one of them? Is Smith's strikeout rate, which is admittedly through the roof, enough to get you on board, or do the walks and the lack of a guaranteed opportunity scare you off?
Yeah, to me it does scare me off unless someone, you know, does emerge as the guy along the way. Because especially in mixed leagues, like I get it, NL only, if you can get even 18 or 20 saves out of either of these players, you'd be happy with that. But in a mixed league, you're going to need someone, as I mentioned, you know, already with the Rays, you're going to want the player to be pretty much in a full-time closer role, unless there's someone like a Betances who just gives you such an obscene, you know, strikeout total and low ratios where it's worth it anyways. And that's not really the case with Smith or Jeffress. So I feel like I'm probably, you know, the closer pool is a little thin this year in the sense that the Brewers, you know, are sharing that job, and the Braves, who we've discussed before, are kind of sharing that job. And those are both teams that figure to have a win total, you know, in the 60s or 70s. So I mean, they might not also generate enough save chances to have either one of those pitchers, if they're sharing the job, help most fantasy owners.
The one thing in that, and again, this is sort of getting too far down the road and getting very minute, but I feel like we're good at that, is that Smith's walk rate, both of them really, but particularly Smith, those guys both walk so many guys for relievers. I mean, they're not. It's not a guy every two innings or not in a Bobby Witt kind of situation. But that it wouldn't surprise me if one of those guys had a rough enough couple of weeks and walked 8 or 10 guys in 8 games that it became the other guy. I could see one of them emerging just because one of the other one kind of scares people off. The problem is I have no idea how you would bet on that. By which I mean I have no idea which way I would mean, who would be more likely, but it still wouldn't surprise me. And again, that's what I was saying about the Rays. Man, I am a full-on change bullpen usage, but I believe these proclamations that they're going to do it differently when I see it actually stick up to a few weeks of actual baseball.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And I guess if I was going to lean one way or the other with the Brewers, I might lean towards Jeffress just because, as you said, if Smith had some hiccups, the fact that he's left-handed might make it just really easy for them to say, we're going to go back to, you know, we're going to use him as a lefty specialist in earlier innings when that inning really dictates that we want a left-hander. So, you know, maybe that just slightly, you know, hedges me towards Jeffress, but not really strong because Jeffress has been pretty erratic in his career, so he could easily be the guy who falters in April.
Yeah, absolutely. We move over to Cleveland, and we start looking at the Indians outfield, which is... It has been a worry for them really all spring due to injuries. And there appears to be something resembling good news as it appears that Michael Brantley may be ready opening day. He is obviously a really good player when he's healthy, but you definitely do have to worry at least some about the health. How are you adjusting your rating of him right now relative to the sort of ongoing health news?
Yeah, I've moved Brantley up in my ratings, but really, to be honest, I haven't moved him up to the point where I really think I'll get him. I just think someone will be more optimistic. He went in the Tout Wars auction last weekend. He went for $17. I was kind of thinking of him more around $12 or $13. So, like, I'm more optimistic now. At the same time, I can see, because the Indians are kind of desperate to get outfield production, it looks like, I think they would take Brantley at 80% or 85% of, you know, of his full skill set. Whereas, I mean, as a fantasy owner, if I'm going to pay big bucks for Brantley, or if I'm going to take him in the first 5-6 rounds of a draft, which is where you might see him going now, I need to know that he's going to be pretty close to 100%. His skill set to me kind of, I love Brantley, and I'm someone who, when he's healthy, loves owning Brantley. But with this shoulder, like, if his power dips a little bit, or if he's just a little less aggressive stealing bases, you know, in an effort to just avoid a re-injury, like all of a sudden he just really isn't doing a lot of damage in any category.
And let me turn this the other way around. You make a fine point that because they are so hard up on outfielders, and because this is a team that expects to contend this year, we might see Brantley sooner. They might be a little less of the caution you often see at the beginning of the year. I don't know that, and I don't mean to say they'll be reckless because I don't think they will, but these are fine lines. You know, sometimes you're talking about a couple extra days or not taking a couple extra days. I have a sort of built-in worry about hitters and shoulders that goes back to having been convinced Scott Rolen was going to the Hall of Fame and then seeing him just dwindle. That's a personal bias I have, but it is one. Talk about hitters and shoulders, I get worried. I worry a little bit about the idea of a guy coming back quickly. I would feel much better about Michael Brantley, honestly, if they said, look, no matter what, we are taking our time. If we think he's in pretty good shape on April 3rd, that's fine. But we're going to give it the extra couple of weeks. We're going to make sure this guy is good, is healthy, is healed, and is ready to go. And the fact that there are these rumblings that any thought of pushing him even a little bit actually worries me a little and almost makes me downgrade at least as much based on long-term worry as it would upgrade based on the extra at bats. Do you share that kind of worry, or is this just my, like, personal weirdness about hitters and shoulders?
No, I'm with you, and I was starting to get a little optimistic when he returned to playing in Cactus League games, and then he played over the weekend. I think the last one he played was on Monday, and then they've kept him out of games since then because he didn't quite recover from those games as well as he had hoped. And that's kind of where, again, my concern that maybe they were pushing him, or he was pushing himself just a little too fast, and now they've taken a step back, and now we're reading that they're probably going to keep him out of those games and just use him in minor league games from now on so that they could backdate a DL stint. And to me, it just all comes back to there's still a lot of uncertainty around Brantley. Neither one of us would probably be surprised if he was in the lineup in the first half of April and then also had to take some days off because he had some soreness, and that maybe that was just something you were kind of living with as a fantasy owner. And sometimes that's the worst thing for a fantasy owner is when your player is neither healthy nor on the disabled list, and you can't decide week to week if you really want to play them or not. And if that was the case with Brantley early in the season, it'd just be a really bad way to start. You're right, it might be better for fantasy owners and for Brantley if he just wasn't in the lineup until May, but I don't know if that's where this is all going because they seem to be pretty aggressive with the whole thing.
Meanwhile, they have also brought in Marlon Byrd. I am not a big Marlon Byrd guy, but at the same time, it wouldn't be shocking if he gets 450 at-bats and gets 20 home runs. I don't think anybody would say, oh, that came out of nowhere. Do you like him at all? Do you like him as a last outfielder kind of option, or are you sort of making him show you he could still do it?
Yeah, the latter. I'm going to make him show me he can still do it. It seems like the Indians have decided to kind of mix and match with their outfield, like outside of the Brantley spot, or maybe even including it in the early part of the season. And I think that all adds up to probably a poor thing for mixed league owners, as far as like you'll see Lonnie Chisenhall some days, you'll see Rajai Davis some days. Tyler Naquin will probably make the team, and you know, he's exciting, but again, if he gets platooned with Davis or someone, you're only going to see him some days. Like, it just all adds up to, you know, probably five players when Brantley's there, you know, mixing and matching in those three spots. And what we really want to see in a mixed league is someone getting, you know, 500 at-bats in the season. So I would make Byrd start the season on waivers, and if he gets hot and they start playing him a lot, which could very well happen, you're right, it wouldn't be shocking, then I'd be fairly quick to pick him up.
Is there anybody else in that mix that you like? Davis is a guy who I feel like he's playing regularly, you like for the steals. Chisenhall is somebody who, he's only 27, which is amazing. He's just one of those guys, seems like he's been around forever. He's still only 27. There were a couple times it seemed like last year where he was starting to show some promise. 2 years ago, he had a very nice year. Either of those guys grab you, or is it really just wait and see on the entire Indian outfield save for Brantley?
Yeah, I think it is wait and see, and I do think that the Indians will roll with the hot hand when one emerges. But if Davis's his stolen base success dipped last season, and you know nobody can run forever, and he was a great base stealer, and maybe he will be again this year, but he really wasn't a great base stealer last season. So now there's kind of two things there. There's the playing time angle, and there's the effectiveness on the base paths angle. So I'm gonna just kind of keep an eye on it, but that is a situation where you'll want to have a quick trigger, especially if you're in a league that uses a daily waiver wire, because once someone starts to emerge, because there are flaws in the games of all those other players, as soon as someone has, you know, a 3 or 4 homer week or something like that, they'll probably get a shot to run with a starting spot.
Speaking of teams with outfield questions, though, it's a totally different kind of outfield question in Dodger land. They have too many guys rather than not enough, so they may not have too many anymore. Andre Ethier will be out for an extended period of time. First of all, Ethier at this point, basically the amount of time he's going to be out, are you even stashing him on your DL, or is he just waiting until he comes back?
Yeah, totally wait till he comes back. I mean, he was just barely mixed league relevant in the first place. In a 12-team league, I don't think I would have even owned him prior to the injury. So I'm definitely not stashing him now. Even when he comes back, we're just not totally sure, you know, will he play all the time, some of the time, how effective will he be? And now we're looking at probably roughly mid-season. If you want to compare him to Johnny Peralta, who has roughly the same return date, I think I'd rather stash Peralta.
So the guy that it seems this is opening the door for is Carl Crawford. And Carl Crawford is a guy who I think broadly people have kind of written off and he hasn't played much, but here's the math. Over the last two seasons, but it's 560 plate appearances. It's basically sort of a full season of plate appearances. If you've got that, Carl Crawford has 33 steals, he's at 288. He's got 75 runs. He's hit 12 home runs. Is that a guy that interests you? Because it's a guy that interests me. It's somebody who I sort of thought was somebody you might write off is not somebody you'd write off. That's a pretty good, if that's what he gives you on an everyday basis, that's a guy I'm interested in.
Yeah, no, I agree. And they're kind of talking about platooning him with Scott Van Slyke, and then Van Slyke would obviously face lefties. So you can, in a weekly transaction, you can kind of roll week to week and look at their upcoming schedule and see if it's a week. You know, if it's a week where they're facing five righties, then it's a week you want Crawford in. And, I mean, with Crawford, you're right. His skills have deteriorated, but not to the point where, you know, you don't want to consider him anymore. And I've always kind of felt like the fact that he's become injury-prone means you don't want to invest a lot in him. But now we're in a nice situation where you don't have to invest a lot in him. He's just someone you pick up off waivers right now, or someone you draft in the last round if you're still drafting this week. So, you know, you make that very small investment in him, and if he gets off to a nice start, you know, he could be a cheap source of steals, and there aren't a lot of those around right now. And if he's not off to a great start, then you can just let go of him. And it's not like it was a couple of years ago where you had to take him in the first 10 rounds with the concern about his health.
And the other thing about Crawford is he could get you a home run every couple of weeks. I don't think anybody thinks he's going to hit 20, but he's a guy that could certainly in 400 at bats hit 10 or 12 home runs. I mean, that sort of combination is, again, look, I don't want to go crazy. I'm not going to run and get him, but it's still like, I'm not writing him off. I'm intrigued by him. He's somebody I wouldn't be shocked to see put up some nice numbers this year.
Yeah, no, I agree. For people in deeper mixed leagues that owned Ethier, I think going to Crawford, you know, is a really sensible replacement if he wasn't drafted in your league. So, and I mean, like we talked about with Boxberger owners, where maybe you can't go straight to Colomé and you have to fill that spot at least temporarily with someone else. I think Ethier owners can go straight to Crawford if they want, and if he gets off to a slow start and or someone else kind of jumps into the picture on a different team that they would rather pick up, then that's fine. But you're right. I don't think he's in that write-off category yet. We've seen many players over the years, you know, struggle with injuries who were stars and have a dip, but then still have some value after that.
One other name, guy that's really actually getting a lot of attention here lately, is Juan Nicasio. I'm curious what you think, because I got to be honest, I'm a skeptic. Even with Pirates magic, it really seemed like things came together when he got moved to the bullpen. He's basically a two-pitch guy with a huge arm. That's something that I love in relief, and I remain skeptical, even with Pirate Magic, that if this guy actually goes in the rotation, it's going to hold up. I love him as a reliever. Maybe he's just a fantasy reliever. I don't love him as a starter, even if he gets the job, even with the Pirates' reputation. Do you share that, or are you buying or at least holding on Nicasio?
Yeah, I'm not super excited yet. I think the hype train's, you know, traveling a little too fast right now for my liking. And part of it is that possibility of Pirates magic. And I agree with you. Like, he made strides as a reliever. At the same time, his control was awful last season. You know, maybe the Pirates can do something about that and make his control a little better. But, you know, you just talked about him as a two-pitch kind of guy who maybe is better used in the bullpen or could have a lot of success in spring training, but maybe not when we're into regular season games and he's facing, you know, lineups three times and he's facing teams that have seen him a little bit more and players who have seen him a little bit more. So if someone wants to pick up, if someone has bench space and they want to put him on the end of their bench and see if he makes the rotation first of all and then how his first couple starts go, then I'm fine with that. But, for example, we've talked about John Neese at times this winter and spring as a new addition to the Pirates pitching staff. I would, even though he hasn't had a great spring, I would still rather have Neese, and I feel like there are owners who are starting to feel like they would rather have Nicasio. Would you rather still have Neese?
I completely agree. I would absolutely take Neese before I took Nicasio. Nicasio is a guy basically I'm willing to be wrong. Somebody may pick him up and be right and get a guy who strikes out 190 guys and puts up nice ratios and gets a decent number of wins. And somebody may be thrilled to get him, but I am perfectly willing to be wrong on Nicasio and let somebody else be right if he thrives. I would much rather at that point in the draft take those innings, take what I think will be reasonable ratios and take a guy that I just think is going to be pretty good. I'm fine with that because of my skepticism on Nicasio as a starter.
Yeah, and when we get into spring stats and people start to get excited about them around this time in March, we have to remember that the sample size is still so, so small. And we're talking about pitchers like Nice or like Nicasio having thrown a volume of innings that equates to basically like three regular season starts tops. Like, that's the amount. I know that they've made more than, you know, two or three spring training starts, but the starts are so short. You know, I'm hearing people or having people ask me questions on Twitter about guys having a rough spring, and then you go and look, and they've thrown, like, 10 innings. And you think, like, if they threw 10 innings and they didn't go so hot at a point during the regular season, like, that's just a blip on the radar, and people wouldn't overreact so much. So when you see those spring training batting averages or whips or ERA or whatever, like, you got to go back and look at the amount of playing time that that's accumulated over, and you realize it's usually, you know, 30 plate appearances or, like I said, about a dozen innings.
Yeah, I mean, look, I wrote a piece about this for Sports on Earth a few weeks ago. I think we talked about this. To me, spring training stats border on useless unless when they have value is if they turn you on to looking at something and you find something out about the process, about the reason they're happening, then I'm interested. If a guy is suddenly striking out people who's never struck him out before and he really is now throwing a cutter for the first time, okay, I'm interested. It's things like that then I'm listening, but just the numbers, I'm not interested. I think that's part of why the Nicasio thing has taken off so much is that people can sort of at least think that there's a reason for it. This is not, if he's doing this with the Angels, I think it's less interesting to everybody, but there is now this body of knowledge about Pirates that I think when you see this, I think that's part of what's going on here is that people are thinking, oh, another Pirate. Okay, well, maybe these numbers are more real than other spring training numbers. But I think the point you make is that, oh, they're still spring training numbers.
Absolutely. It's the volume and it's the competition. And we don't even trace it back, but to trace it back and see who the pitcher faced for all those at-bats, like, and how many of them were minor leaguers. And it's just, it's apples and oranges to the regular season when you face a full lineup of major league quality players.
All right, that's the news for this week. We're going to take a moment here to chat with MLB.com's Yankee beat reporter, Brian Hoke, talking about the numerous Yankee-related fantasy questions. So let's chat with Brian.
We're joined by Brian Hoke, and we're talking a little Yankees from a fantasy perspective, and there are a lot of questions about this team, just broadly, but also for fantasy players. And I think the first that a lot of people are wondering about, we've been talking for years about Masahiro Tanaka's health. How confident are you that he will make 30 starts, and that if he makes 30 starts, he will be a number one or two level kind of starting pitcher?
I'm not extremely confident that he'll make 30 starts. I think his track record shows that he'll probably need a break at some point. Thus far, the Yankees haven't had the huge break that everybody's been fearing, but I think that 25 starts is not out of the question for him. He's proven an ability to go out and take the ball. I think what you've seen this spring is he's held back a little bit. I think there's more there. I think Larry Rothschild, the pitching coach, Joe Girardi, they say he lets it go a little bit more in the bullpen. He hasn't shown that against hitters this year. But I think if you look at his track record, this is a guy who strikes out hitters, even with the diminished stuff. He was really, really good at the beginning of 2014. He's been a little lesser than that. So as far as a fantasy perspective goes, I think that there's definitely value there. I'm not sure if you want to call it a one or a two, but this is a guy who's going to take the ball, and he is one of the best pitchers, if not the best, that the Yankees have.
Well, and that leads to my next question. He is apparently the opening day starter. Is he the guy you would like the most from a fantasy perspective, or do you see a guy like Pineda or Severino by the end of the year having those better ratios, higher strikeout numbers, all that kind of thing?
I think Pineda, to me, is prime for a big breakout season. I think all the indications are there that he's going to take a huge step forward this year. I mean, the question with Pineda is just health, but I think that if he can stay out there, he will give the Yankees what they need. Severino, I mean, the sky is the limit for him, too. He has proven he belongs at this level. I think that you look at some of the peripherals and you think, maybe the home runs, maybe a little bit too much. That's something he'll work on. But this guy's 22 years old. He's the ceiling is so high. He's got a world of potential. So I think that the Yankees are going to rely a lot on Pineda and Severino. I think that those are the two that are going to take them. Tanaka's obviously in that, too. But I could make a strong case for taking any one of those guys.
As we stay in the pitching staff, Andrew Miller will close to start the year. they brought in Chapman. Clearly, you don't bring him in if you don't intend for him to be a huge part of it. He is apparently the closer. But is there a scenario in which Miller is so good that either those save chances are mixed for the rest of the year, or that they don't move him out of it, or is it black and white? Chapman comes back. Chapman pitches the ninth.
To me, Chapman's their ninth inning guy. That's why they got him. I think that Miller has proven he can go anywhere in the bullpen, which gives them more freedom and flexibility. So from a fantasy perspective, that's not good news for Miller owners. Chapman's going to get the majority of the save opportunities. Sure, there are going to be games where Chapman has gone, say, two or three days in a row. Probably not three, but he's gone two out of three, and he's just not going to be available. But for the most part, it's Chapman that's going to be getting those saves for the Yankees.
On the offensive side, there are a lot of big names and a lot of guys with questions. We look at Ellsbury, Gardner, Teixeira, Beltran. Every one of those guys, it wouldn't shock you if any one of those guys had a huge year, stayed healthy, put up big numbers. It wouldn't shock you if any one of those guys played 70 or 80 games. Who worries you the most, and who do you think is most likely to sort of live up to the numbers that we associate with his name?
You know, that's an interesting question. I think Ellsbury is the one that concerns me the most. I think the Yankees have got a lot of money in this guy, $153 million. You know, now into his 30s, history of injury problems. Another one this year, I mean, look, there was no way he was going to get away from a fastball up and in. You know, that's just going to happen. But these things tend to linger with hitters. We saw that once with Curtis Granderson. He was in his first at-bat of the spring, and he got hit, and then you didn't see him for another 8 weeks. So the Yankees were fortunate that Ellsbury didn't get hurt here, but that's no guarantee that something won't pop up later. It tends to be the history with him. So, look, dynamic player, and you saw it the first 6-7 weeks of last season. He was really an igniter. He sparked the lineup. They function better with him at the top. It's crazy for opposing pitchers, but when he's not there, and he wasn't completely there for the second half of the year, look, he didn't play in the wild card game. I think that's a huge part of this team is keeping Jacoby Ellsbury healthy.
And who do you have the most confidence in to sort of reach what we would associate with, again, a lot of star names there?
I think Mark Teixeira is my guy. I think that A-Rod, too, coming off a 33-home run year, but I have some questions about him repeating that. I think Mark Teixeira came back full force. That wrist is healthy again. I think you can look at him as a 30-100 threat for sure. He was one of the MVPs of this team last year. Obviously, his year got cut short, and he still had 31 homers. So he's come back. He's fully healthy. I think that he obviously is playing for a contract next year. I think you're going to see some big numbers out of Mark Teixeira this year.
Thanks to MLB.com's Brian Hoke for taking some time to talk fantasy while he's in the middle of another very busy Yankees spring training camp. There's nothing quite like covering one of the Yankees, Red Sox, Mets in spring training. It is a challenge. But now we move on. We previewed Tout Wars, and we've now got a recap. And just first of all, broadly, pleased, frustrated, how did it go for Team Zinke?
I was pretty pleased. It's amazing the grind of an auction and how many times during the auction I went back and forth between feeling like I had too much money left or not enough money left. But overall, I was really pleased. I had some goals going into it. I didn't want to start the season where I felt like I was behind in OBP. This is a league that uses OBP instead of batting average, and that's a hard thing to chase during the season. So I was happy I got a few hitters who should have a high on base percentage, and I decided this year that I wanted at least two and possibly three ace level pitchers, and that was a big focus of mine. And so early in the auction, I bought Jake Arrieta, Garrett Cole, and Dallas Keuchel, and I kind of feel like with those three aces, if they do what I expect them to do this year, that I can really loosely mix and match with the back end of my staff and not have to worry about my ratios. That was a big goal of mine.
We've talked about this some and about the value, how maybe the value of starting pitchers in fantasy is changing and how maybe there is more justification for being aggressive on starters than there used to be. Did you make that decision kind of in that climate, or was there something more specific to the league or to your experiences this spring that led you to that?
No, it was really in that where there is a group of pitchers right now that are just pitching at such an incredibly high level. That being said, I don't feel like starting pitching on the whole is really that much deeper than it was a few years ago. So factoring in both of those things, I was like, the fact that some of these Garrett Cole types are pitching so well isn't being offset by just having a multitude of really good pitchers available on the waiver wire all the time. So I decided to, you know, really heavily influence my innings with those three aces. And then, you know, I do agree that you can find pitching, which a lot of people say you can find pitching on waivers throughout the season, and I'm obviously going to try to do that to fill in the back end of my staff where I have guys like Nice that we already mentioned on this podcast and Marco Estrada, and, you know, I'm going to try to mix and match in those spots. But at the same time, I wanted that really big base. I think if you don't have a couple of those aces now, it's really hard to compete in the pitching categories because other owners in your league are going to have a couple of those aces and they're going to do a pretty good job on waivers, and you're just not going to be able to keep pace with them.
The other thing you mentioned that is a relevant wrinkle in this particular draft is the value of on-base percentage. And you clearly made some picks of guys who are more about OBP than about batting average. Duda, Jose Bautista. Just from a mindset perspective, because I think that's maybe the value to a lot of players, is if they get into a league like that. They do exist. If you get into a league like that, how much do you adjust? How do you kind of get in the right frame of mind? Because part of it is just sort of getting your mind right and thinking about the different values of things from one draft to another.
Yeah, and it does take, like, a fair amount of adjustment. Like, we think of Jose Bautista as a low-average hitter. He is a low-average hitter. So, you know, he's a negative in that fifth hitting category in a regular league. He's a high on-base percentage player. So it's almost like he's the equivalent of a 300 or 310 hitter when you're in an OBP league. So you really have to, when you set your player values, account for that. And I've kind of decided in the last couple of years that I don't like chasing on-base percentage or batting average. It doesn't really matter. It's really the same fight, no matter what your league scores. You know, I don't like chasing that in season. I think you'll notice, Matthew, as we go through the podcast this season, when we talk about waiver pickups and things like that during the season, we'll talk about guys who can give us homers, players who can give us steals. It's really hard to chase batting average or on base percentage. Like, you don't, as the season goes along, you really don't want to sit a productive player late in the season because they can't help you in that category. And at the same time, you also, it doesn't feel good to pick up someone who you're just hoping that will get on base, but you don't really feel like they're going to help you a lot in other places. So I decided a focus of mine was to have a really good base there, and that way I can be more free on the waiver wire. And if I see a Marlon Byrd type, you know, I don't have to worry about the low on base percentage. I'd rather chase the counting stats.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Were there any, goodness, I see you are on Josh Tomlin yet again, the guy you're going to go, and Bartolo, look at that.
Yeah, I made Bartolo Mr. Irrelevant. There was a big, because I won last year, I had the last pick in the reserve round, and there was a big buildup as to who would be Mr. Irrelevant. And I thought, who could be a better Mr. Irrelevant for us all to remember than Bartolo? Plus, you know, I might use him for some early season starts.
As you look at the entirety of your roster, are there any other maybe quiet moves that you kind of really like that you would maybe care to share with people, that the guys you sort of got at a value or that you were pleased to be able to pick up?
Yeah, one thing I noticed as our auction, I mean, every auction's unique. There were some really good deals in the outfield late in our auction, and I got Jacoby Ellsbury for $7, and, you know, I know he's not what he used to be, but I feel like $7 is just a really good price, you know, for someone who does still have a fair amount of potential. And Ray Flowers was able to get Matt Holliday for $4, and he got A-Rod, you know, for his utility spot for a couple bucks, and Zach Steinhorn from MLB.com got Jay Bruce for $6. Like, I felt like the outfield deals late were really good. And then when we got through the draft and got to the reserve round, actually probably the pickup that I was most excited about, I had the first pick in the reserve round from having won last year, so I was able to get Ryan Zimmerman for my bench. And to me, Ryan Zimmerman is someone in a 15-team league who has to be in the starting, like, someone's starting lineup. I couldn't believe he made it through all the way through there. I felt like he tied in with those outfield and first base deals. You know, it was just a great deal to have him on my bench and have the luxury of being able to put him in my lineup at any point.
Would you like Zimmerman as much in a batting average league as you do in an OBP league?
Maybe a little less, but still enough. Like, I still feel, maybe this goes back a little bit to the Carl Crawford discussion that we had, where I feel like the concern with Zimmerman really isn't whether he can be fairly productive when he's playing. It's just how much is he going to play this year, and is he going to spend time on your disabled list? Well, now that we're done with Ryan Zimmerman as an early round pick, you know, like, you don't really care that much if he spends some time on the disabled list. Like, if I get him for 150 games, that's amazing. But if I even get him for 100, you know, for a reserve round pick, or I thought someone would take him for $1 or $2 or $3, I had him valued at $5. Like, if someone had him taken him for a small amount of money near the end of the auction, like, then when he goes on the DL, you're like, oh, it's not really that big of a deal. Matthew, do you feel like when he's playing, he'll be pretty productive?
I hope so. But I'm still, I don't know what he's going to have in the way of power. Like, I'm skeptical. I'd like to be wrong. I like him as a player. He's certainly going to be in a lineup where he's going to have some opportunities. But, and look, at that point, I totally agree. It's all upside. There's nothing but benefit there. But I'm not convinced that even if he's healthy, he's going to be all that productive. Though, again, RBI run in that lineup, you got to think that at least will be fine.
Yeah, and I'm expecting him to hit, like, either cleanup or fifth, which that's part of my thinking with him is just from that spot. Like, if you're hitting directly behind Bryce Harper or even two spots behind him, like, it's a really nice spot this year to drive in runs. He could easily lead the majors in on-base percentage, and we wouldn't be surprised.
No, that's a good point. So that is the Fantasy 411 for this week. We are 9 days from opening day. When we talk next week, we will be almost at opening day. What say we do this again next week? He's Fred Zinke. I'm Matthew Leach. Thanks, everybody, for listening.